Hey listeners, it's your host, Aisha. I love all of our episodes equally, but this one holds a special place in my heart because the guest, Jarek Bischoff, has this fascinating story, and he's this very sort of alive person, which I like in people. Aliveness. Not so much with the zombies. Anyway, I think you'll see what I mean about Jarek. He's just a really cool guy. Plus, Terry Gross interviewed him too, which makes me feel like Terry and I are best friends, which sounds creepy, but is actually not. Hey, Terry. So this episode has actually been a long time in the making, and we're timing its release with the upcoming release of Jarek's new album, Cistern, which, by the way, you'll hear parts of in this episode before the album is even released. It's top secret. Anyway, the album comes out on July 15th, and I'm looking forward to that. So go to iTunes, subscribe to us, rate us and review us, tell all your friends about us, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube, SoundCloud, Snapchat, etc., etc. Okay, I'm done. Enjoy the episode. I'm Daisha Clay, host of The Classical Classroom, a show where experts teach me about classical music. I used to know very little about classical music, and now I'd like to think that I know slightly more than very little. What I have learned is that classical music isn't the obscure, static art form that I thought that it was. In fact, it's a dynamic force that's doing amazing things in the world right now. Welcome to a Classical Classroom sub-series, Music Works. We'll go behind the scenes at concerts, hear amazing artist stories, and look at all the ways that classical music is working in the world today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom Music Works episode. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is Jarek Bischoff. He is a composer, arranger, performer, and producer. He's toured with and recorded a lot of indie rock bands, but began creating orchestral music, which we'll get back to in just a little bit. He's collaborated with everyone from Neil Gaiman to Chibo Matto to Bang on a Can, and he's been commissioned by the likes of the Kronos Quartet and had his work performed by the Seattle and Oregon Symphonies. Jarek Bischoff, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Hi, Daisha. Thanks for having me.
So I'm pretty excited about what we're going to talk about today because your story is actually a little bit like my own. I did not come from a classical music background at all. And so what we're going to do today is kind of take a tour through your life and talk about your very atypical journey to becoming an orchestral music composer.
That sounds good. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people these days are coming to classical music from the opposite direction. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about this too.
Well, so let's talk about your musical beginnings. Like, were your parents involved in music? What kind of music did you listen to around the house and stuff like that?
Yeah, my dad and my brother are both drummers and extremely into music. So back in the days of CD Logic, those big binders of CDs. My dad had these huge binders of CDs, and it was mostly kind of crazy prog rock and, you know, like fantasy prog rock.
Are you talking like Rush?
No, like weirder, like Yes was kind of on the normal side. I'm talking more about Soft Machine and a lot of jazz, especially jazz drummers like Tony Williams and all the stuff he did and Miles Davis, but then kind of, yeah, also all this strange prog rock. And so I play bass, that's my main instrument, and so I spent my early childhood learning all these insane riffs that I didn't even really know were insane riffs. That was just music to me because that was what was around the house. And then, you know, I'd have it really loud on headphones at school and people would look at me going, "What the heck are you listening to?" You know, they're all listening to NSYNC and stuff and I'm listening to fantasy prog rock.
I love it.
So that was kind of what was playing in the house.
How old were you when you first picked up an instrument and went, yeah, this feels good.
I think I was in a seventh grade or so, probably 13 or so.
Yeah.
And I was interested in playing bass. My dad was playing in a jazz trio, and this mm-hmm. this upright bass player he was playing with was really good, and just the low end was really, really making me interested and excited. I was super into sports at the time, and my family is not a sports family at all, So as soon as the words left my mouth of saying, oh, I'm interested in bass, my parents just bought me a bass, like, you know, immediately. Just going like, please pick this up, because there's no way you're going to be a professional baseball player. You're good, but not that good.
So, that is hilarious, yeah. Because that's like the opposite of most people's stories.
Right.
When a parent hears a child saying, you know, I want to be an artist of some sort.
Yeah.
Generally, the response is, that could be a thing.
Yeah. know? Yeah.
But why don't you think about these other options?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so my parents have been very, very supportive.
So your parents listened to this sort of prog rock and jazz and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you became a more conscious music listener and you started playing the bass,
mm-hmm.
did you continue listening to that stuff? Did you develop your own interest? What direction did you go in?
So I was actually raised on a sailboat my entire life. So this, you know, little 37-foot sailboat. And mm-hmm. After the second year of high school, we left on a 3-year sailing trip down to Central and South America and the Caribbean and all this stuff. So I was then just completely cut off from other kids, for one thing, mm-hmm. or at least kids that I could speak a language to other than music. And I also was cut off from American culture. I, you know, it was kind of right before the internet was really happening and mm-hmm. all that. So I didn't have anyone to bounce ideas off of except for my parents and my brother, and that was all great. I mean, I'm very lucky, but it kind of sent me down this funny path of playing bass. And then bass is kind of the worst instrument to be by yourself with, you know, because like
yeah.
guitar, you can kind of sing along with it, or, you know, you're making chords, you're doing something harmonically, you know, interesting. Mm-hmm. The bass sitting by yourself going dong, 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 you know, it can only be fun for so long. So
right.
actually, the fact that my dad was so into prog rock and stuff like that really helped, because all those musicians are these, you know, crazy technical musicians. And so I kind of went down this path of like, I'm going to be the best bass player in the world. I'm going to practice and learn all the different techniques like tapping and slapping and mm-hmm. all the different stuff, and try to be the fastest, most technical player on the planet, which, you know, didn't happen. But I also soon realized that is not the music of my soul. My dad still is trying to pull me back into doing that. He actually had a funk intervention with me once because I wasn't slapping anymore. And he was like, you really got to slap. Oh, man, no, I really don't.
Right, the traditional, you gotta slap dad talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you that, like, as you're on the boat and you're traveling around, like, were you picking up musical influences from the places that you are stopping?
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it was funny because we had a family band, you know, on our boat, and we would set up all of our instruments on top of our boat and have other boaters tie up their little rafts to the side of our boat, and we perform concerts, you know, like out in the middle of nowhere and stuff.
Wow.
But another thing we would do is as soon as we'd arrive in a new port, we'd walk around and find out who the rad musicians were locally, and then set up jam sessions and find a bar that would let us all play music together and do it.
Wow.
Which is great, but it all sounds so romantic and great, but it's funny because us as a family, we were like, oh, let's play your music. Let's play Latin music. Let's dive right into it. And all of them were like, let's play Jimi Hendrix and Carlos Santana and, you know, all this music that is from our culture. We were wanting to play each other's culture's music instead of us like being immersed in all this stuff. So, you know, I played like Jimmy Buffett songs more than probably Jimmy Buffett has played Jimmy Buffett songs. Just every time I would set up my instrument, they'd be like, what songs do you know? And I'd be like, well, you're not going to know the songs I know. I'll play whatever you know. And inevitably, every single time, it was like the first thing out of their mouth was, Margaritaville? And like, oh, gosh, here we go again. Yeah.
Did your soul just die a little bit every time somebody asked you to play that?
It honestly did. But, you know, I would figure out ways to, like, slap and tap and anything. So I played some very strange arrangements of Margaritaville.
That is great. What is it with Jimmy Buffett and sailors?
Tell me about it. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a real thing. All that was awesome, and it's all coming around and influencing my music now, where, you know, I spent so much time in Central and South America where and playing with local musicians that, you know, sometimes I'll get these Latin rhythms or using Latin instruments in my music, but not in any kind of traditional way. It's like, oh, weird. Yeah, that's how that music is coming back out of me now.
Once you figured out that you really wanted to play music, why did you not take a more traditional route? I mean, it kind of sounds like your family didn't, you know, they didn't come from a classical background, so that probably wasn't a question in your life. But were you aware, I guess, of you know, the possibility of going to conservatory or that kind of thing?
Yeah, and I basically what it comes down to is I really, really suck at school. I'm terrible at school. And so I went to school for a brief time for jazz and kind of realized that I wasn't interested in being a professional jazz musician. I was definitely interested in being a musician, but I wasn't really sure what kind yet. And that time, this wonderful band called the Degenerate Art Ensemble out of Seattle, they were looking for a bass player to go on this really long European tour. And they play really experimental, kind of big band / punk / classical music. And yeah, it's really cool. And they let everybody in the band compose for it. And it was just full of all these musical, brilliant minds.
Is that when you first started composing, or had you been composing before?
I'd been composing rock songs, you know, and getting more and more involved in being a dictator in a rock band. Even though I was a bass player, I always was the guy being like, no, you should play it like this, and maybe you could, you know, do this different inversion of this chord, and blah, 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 blah. You know, I was very hands-on and interested in an arrangement. But this was the first time that I had access to musicians other than like guitar players and stuff. There was two drummers, a string trio, a few horns, bass, guitar, you know, so it was a lot of instruments and moving parts that I could kind of write for. So I talked to my parents and they were, you know, paying for my school, which is unreal and such a gift. And I talked to them, and I was just like, this school thing really isn't working out for me. I don't feel it. And they're like, well, you know, do what you want to do. This is the only time we're going to pay for it. So that's what you're going to have to decide from. So I left school and went and played in this band, in this European tour. And I really took it upon myself to corner all these musicians and really interview them and like go on long walks with each of them and try to soak up as much from these people as I could, and kind of use that actually as my school.
So you fall in with this band, and I believe after that you had a successful stint with various indie rock and experimental acts.
Yeah.
At what point did you start to move toward orchestral music?
So right around the time that I quit school to go on tour with the Digital Art Ensemble, kind of the nail in the coffin for school for me was actually, I was walking down the hall and I heard the most incredible music coming out of one of the classrooms, and I stopped right in my tracks and was listening, and I actually just, I mean, this is so unlike me. I just walked right into the classroom, walked right up to the teacher, and I just like looked at him and said, "What is this?" And and he said, "Oh, this is Arvo Part Fratres." And it was the Gil Shaham version. And it was just that violin intro with the, and I'd never heard violin playing like that. It encapsulated everything I was interested in at that moment. It was technically interesting, harmonically interesting, moody, and it felt like the most purest, most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. And
wow.
And I mean, the rest of that piece is also the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. That's my favorite piece of music. And I left that classroom, walked directly to the record store, bought that record, and kind of just went, that's it. This is my guiding light. I'm not going to
wow.
do school anymore. I'm going to be in this band. And there's a whole world out there that I didn't even know existed. And that's it. I'm hooked.
Wow, so you had just this intense epiphany.
Yeah.
Hearing this music and just decided to completely change course.
Yeah, I mean, I had musically. Never even gone to see a symphony orchestra ever in my life, and actually never did until I was asked to compose a piece for orchestra, and I was sitting in the orchestra for the very first time, and that was also the moment where I went, okay, this is the coolest thing ever. I don't know how I wasn't exposed to this before and how I didn't realize that this was the coolest music ever.
Yeah.
Those two moments really completely affected where I am now.
Well, contrary to popular belief, there are few symphonies out on the water.
Yeah,
so
that's for sure. That's for sure.
So, well, what did you do next? So you've had this musical epiphany. You hear this Arvo Part music, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, this is now what I want to do. So what do? You
I just did it. That's
you just did
it. I was just like, well, okay.
But what did you do?
Well, I mean, it was actually a slower process, I guess. I was playing in all these rock bands, and you know, to be able to be a musician and only a musician and not have side jobs is to have side jobs in music. You know, I made a very clear decision at about 12 years ago that, okay, I'm going to just be a musician. That's it. I'm not going to take any other jobs, no matter how difficult life gets. Just going to do music. And, you know, it can be any job within music, but just music. So I just started trying to learn how to do everything I could in music. And so part of that was producing. And so I was producing these bands, and they'd be like, oh, we want a cello on this song. And so we would invite a cellist over, and we wouldn't have any music for them. We'd just be like, oh, you know, just play. And, you know, so we would kind of waste the cellist's time, and we'd waste our own time, and we'd waste money because it was taking a lot of time. And so at that point, I was like, you know, I hear parts in my head. Why don't I just, you know, learn how to write this stuff out? And I read a little bit of music just through jazz stuff, more just chord changes, not so much actual notes. So it was kind of starting from scratch. It's like, okay, I'm going to teach myself how to write this stuff. And then as I was getting better at that, the bands I was playing in and producing, we were all getting more and more ambitious and going, oh, let's add flute and let's actually have a string quartet. And then, you know, before we knew it, it was the size of an orchestra. And that was a clear moment where I remember pressing mute on the drum set and the electric bass and the electric guitar, and just had voice and orchestra coming back at me. And I didn't even realize that I had written, you know, my first orchestral piece.
And what was that? What was your first orchestral piece?
Stuff for the record by Parenthetical Girls called Entanglements. Yeah, that was the first time where I kind of went, wow, all right, this is something that I can actually do. I had no idea that I was doing it, and that's great. As soon as I realized that I could do that, I got really head over heels for doing that. And also around that same time, a little bit before, I was exposed to this great band Dirty Projectors, which is a pretty popular indie rock band. But the main guy in that, Dave Longstreth, he's an amazing composer. And one of his old records called Slaves' Graves was another epiphany for me, where he was a guy, you know, a lot like me. And then I heard this music that he had just put out, and it was pretty full-on chamber music. And I went, whoa, you don't have to be like a 200-year-old dude, and you don't have to have like be making music for emperors or kings. You can be like a weirdo indie rock dude in your 20s in your apartment writing this music. And I heard this music and I went, whoa, I could do that. I could do that too, you know, and it was totally a DIY thing, and I appreciated that.
I think the guys who wrote for those kings hundreds of years ago were also 20-year-old dudes.
Yeah, I think they probably were. You know? Yeah, yeah.
The stuff that you're talking about is, I think that people who are outside of the classical world, like you and me, and you're looking at it, it seems like tests have to be passed and you have to know certain things, and it's this very mystical, magical world that, like, you don't know how to get into it, and it feels like any way that you do try to get into it is maybe the wrong way.
Yeah.
because who are you
exactly
in the face of capital C classical music, you know?
Yeah. And when I made this record called Composed, which was all orchestral songs with guest singers, and I recorded it by taking my one microphone around the city and recording my friends and layering the violins, you know, 16 times to be able to make it sound like a huge violin section, and just did that to emulate a gigantic orchestra. Mm-hmm. And even though I knew I was making orchestral music, I was not thinking about classical music or the classical community or anything. And it wasn't until my first big show in New York where I was playing with an orchestra and had all the guest singers and stuff. And I remember right before going on stage, the stage manager was like, okay, so the orchestra is going to go out, and then the conductor is going to go out, and then you're going to go out. And I was going like, wait, but we're a band. Like the musicians, we're all the same thing, you know? Like, and it was this moment like, whoa, I made this thing without even thinking about how it's going to really fit into the world. And now, because it's orchestral music, I'm entering a whole different world that I don't understand whatsoever.
And right, that has all of these rules
when to clap,
can walk out on stage when, you know.
It was this mind-melting moment, and I get to work a lot more now with orchestras and chamber ensembles and string quartets, and still alien to me, but and also very exciting when I do my own shows to try to really be conscious of what rules in that community I love and which I don't love. You know,
right.
Like for instance, the not walking out together. When it's my own show, I love to just walk out there all together like we're a band, and you know, there's no hierarchy. It's everyone's in this together. Everyone's doing this thing. But I love wearing tuxedos, you know? So so that part of the tradition I love.
Bring a really unique perspective to the way that you have created the music on your new album, Cistern. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and it's a step deeper into the classical world, but also kind of into the ambient world. I had the amazing experience of getting to do a residency up in Seattle, in Port Townsend specifically, at this army base that has a cistern, which is it's this huge 2 million gallon empty water tank underground. The only way you can get into it is through a tiny manhole. It's pitch black. It's incredible. And so the amazing part about it is it's reverb. If you snap your fingers, you can hear that the sound you just made for 45 seconds. It has a 45-second reverb decay.
Wow.
So I spent 3 days down there where I figured out a way to plug my computer into a car battery and be able to run power. The only light was through the manhole, and I invited a couple friends up there, and just this space was unreal. I could play my trombone and stack, you know, a 7-note chord just by myself by going doot, 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 doot. And then all those notes would be sustaining for 45 seconds. And so you have to kind of relearn how to play. It's actually the exact opposite of all that prog rock that I learned. It's like, okay, slow everything down. Every movement is going to impact the next 45 seconds. So
that sounds like the Ableton device.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
But like just naturally occurring.
Yeah. It's unreal. So I spent 3 days down there just improvising. And part of that time was improvising with friends. And and then I wrote a couple seeds of pieces down there. And then, you know, came back to reality, real earth, non-reverberation life. And not only turned those seeds into full orchestral pieces, but then composed the rest of a record's worth of music just kind of on the theme of the cistern and how you had to change the way you play. And so it's all this kind of more oceanic, long, textural music.
Yeah.
And it's something, yeah, I'm very, very excited about it. And it's more through composed than composed. Composed was more song-based.
Then composed the album.
Composed the album, yeah. It's confusing.
Right, right.
this is more like, you know, one thought leading to the next, or just one thought and letting that ride out.
Well, this is very exciting, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of that. I have one more question for you, which is actually more of a favor.
Yeah.
I know that you were interviewed on Fresh Air.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you could tell Terry Gross that I said hello.
Actually, she was the one that gave me the smackdown for the coffee squeak.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
She's one of my personal heroes.
Yeah, me too.
One of my dreams is to be interviewed by Terry Gross one day.
I mean, it's one of those kind of benchmark things where anytime I get nervous about anything, now for the rest of my life, I can go, dude, I was interviewed by Terry Gross. I can handle this, you know, because that was...
I love it.
That was... scary. I'm so glad that we did it early in the morning before I was even like awake enough to realize the gravity of the situation, because I've been a fan for forever. And yeah, I was just as soon as I had my headphones on and she was like, "Hi, this is Terry." And I was "Oh my," that voice was coming back. Oh
my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Jarek Bischoff, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. This has been so much fun. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been really nice.
All right, everybody, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom Music Works. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. Follow us on the Twitters, the Tumblrs, and the YouTubes. Subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes. Email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Tiramisu-Holslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing cyclops eye. Thanks to composer George Heathco for the theme music to Music Works. Thanks to Jarek Bischoff for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.